I hand over to other people. Job's own reaction to it, when he curses the day he was born, he keeps on saying, I want to reason with God, I want to talk to God, I want a day in court, because this just isn't fair. What would you say that teaches us as well?
Yeah.
Bear with us, guys.
Right, are we there?
Yes, we are.
You can look at Job's reactions in several ways. There are passages where he's not what you would call particularly noble. There are times when he feels a bit sorry for himself. And frankly, if you're sitting there on your pile of ash with your body covered in sores from head to foot, I think I'd feel pretty sorry for myself as well. There are times when he gets angry with God, but I reckon God can cope with that. And whenever Job shouts at God, it is God he's shouting at. So he never stops being a believer. And his anger is, I think, perfectly understandable. There are times, in fact, where his anger is really quite commendable. Because what he's doing, he's resisting his suffering and he's resisting the drivel that's been said about him. He gets passionately angry, and rightly so, at the friends for saying to him, you must have done something wrong, Job. And he says, I haven't done anything wrong. What do you mean? So he does get angry, but he gets more angry with the friends and he gets angry with God. And rightly so. He resists his suffering. He resists the rubbish that is spoken about him and to him. And legitimately so. But I come back to what I said at the beginning. God affirms Job, my servant Job. And he says the friends are talking drivel. And that's what you have to take away.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, I'm now opening the floor to questions, comments, thoughts. But also, if you want to get a cup of tea, you want to get a cup of coffee, do feel free just to go up and get one, and a biscuit if there are any left.
Thanks, Graham. Stephen, that was such a great talk. Thank you so much for that.
Pardon?
Can I get near this microphone?
Sure.
Are you ready?
It's fine. Yeah.
Cool. So I had a little... when you mentioned Rabbi Kushner's book, I had a little look online about it and basically came to... It might be an oversimplification of what he says, because I haven't read the book, but he seems to come to the conclusion that God is always with us in our suffering, but he isn't always able to prevent our suffering. Now, I might be oversimplifying this again, but I've always taken the view that God's sovereignty has to work in conjunction with our free will, and sometimes to stop suffering would be a violation of free will. So that makes sense to me, but what I would say is that if we're going to take that view, if we're going to insist that God never does this to teach us a lesson, if we're going to take that view, does it mean that we have to concede some ground to the idea that God is not truly omnipotent? And that would be that's where I sort of worry, because I don't want to offend God by saying he's not omnipotent, but it seems to be that if you take that line of thinking, then he isn't truly omnipotent. Yeah.
There is an element in which you have to start looking at some of those big issues. You're absolutely right. Years ago, I went on holiday and to Rome and became desperately ill and was absolutely convinced that I'd done something to deserve it. And this food poisoning thing that was going on, you know, why is this happening to me? And I theologized on it and came to conclusions I won't go into. The problem comes, Rob,
You can say that for yourself. If it helps, it helps. The problem comes when you multiply it across the globe. This is where it becomes tricky. Yes, you can say, maybe God is trying to teach me a lesson. Maybe, and Hebrews says this, you know, he disciplines us. You can say that if it's yourself, if that helps. But it isn't an answer to all the suffering in all the world at all the time. Because if you were to look at every instance of pain and anguish and suffering and tragedy and disease and accidents that happen now, at this moment in time, and then tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, if you multiply that all those times and you try and use the same answer, then it starts to look desperately weak and desperately thin. If God is teaching me a lesson, okay, but why is he teaching that person a lesson, or why is he punishing that person? Is every instance of pain and suffering, if God is omnipotent and God is sovereign and God is causing all these things, if God is causing all these things, why? And what sort of a God is he? If he's afflicting cancer, if he's afflicting Parkinson's disease, if he's afflicting motor neuron disease. The most godly woman in my last church, Muriel Bacon, local preacher, absolutely fantastic woman, got motor neuron disease. My church secretary, my church treasurer in my last church got Parkinson's. And the end for both Muriel and for Mike was so pitiable. Absolutely pitiable. And if somebody ever gave me a hint or a clue or made even the slightest suggestion that God was doing this for a reason, I'd hit them round the head. Frankly, I would. So if you say to me, well, you're questioning God's sovereignty, you're questioning God's omnipotence, okay, maybe I am. But I'm looking here in Job 39 and 40 and 41, and I'm seeing a world that is free. I'm seeing things that happen without reason. God isn't directing the pathway of the ostrich or the wild ox or the wild goat or the wild donkey. And the writer here is suggesting that there is this freedom in a world, that God has created a world that has this freedom within it, and that he isn't pulling the strings all the time. We want a world sometimes as people of faith where God is pulling all the strings. We're all puppets. If that's the world we want, then so be it. But I don't think it's the world God's created, and I don't think it's a helpful way of seeing things. Sorry, long answer.
I'd just add that in many ways what God is saying there in those chapters as well is it's not, I'm angry with you, Job, but it is a reminder that he is bigger than we are. And he has purposes that we don't understand. And I don't think that's not meant as a criticism, that's meant as a truth. And that's often hard for us because, as you're saying, Stephen, we want reasons that make sense. So even if we're going to accept God is bigger than us, we still want an explanation that makes sense, and we don't want one like, can you not let God be God? And it's essentially when Job is questioned by God, at first it's, okay, you win. And when God says, no, I'm not happy with that, I want a proper answer from you. Job's answer is, I can't. I don't know what you're doing. I don't understand why, but you are God, and I'm not.
So as I've got the mic, I'm going to say something. I think in some ways the writer of Job does give us the answer at the very beginning, because the cause of Job's suffering is Satan, who hates God's creation. And to me, suffering is evil lashing out. It doesn't care who it hurts. In some ways, the more righteous, the better. And we can't put God in a box and say, this is the only way God works. God is, as David was saying, so much beyond us that we have to accept that sometimes maybe God does allow things to teach us something. Sometimes it's just evil happens and God is there for us. And we just need to trust God because he does love us. But we're in a world where bad things happen.
Yes.
And we can't expect God to step in and stop everything bad happening to everybody who loves him, because that'd be a bit of a giveaway, wouldn't it? You wouldn't need faith then.
Rob said earlier that some, trying to summarise Kushner's book, that God is with us in our suffering. And I think that's right. And that's a helpful way of looking at it. That is as good a solution as you can reach, that God is with us in our suffering. I think one of the difficulties of attributing pain and sickness and accident and whatever it is to Satan is that you're going to finish up giving Satan more authority and more power than God. Because if you look at all the things that go on in the world at any one time, I'm not talking about wars or whatever, if Satan is the cause of Mike's Parkinson's disease or Muriel's motor neuron disease or my mother's cancer or my dad's cancer, if Satan is the cause of all those things, then he has to be, at the end of the day, more powerful than God. And I won't go down that road at all. And as I say, what I think we start to see within, embryonically, in the book of Job, is an attempt to say there is a degree of freedom and autonomy in the world that God is not directing or controlling, and I don't think Satan is either, but is just part of the world that God has made. He's made human beings with bodies that are finite, that have shelf life, that are prone to disease. That's just the way he's made us. And if I contract cancer or heart disease or whatever, it isn't that God is punishing me. It isn't that God is inflicting me to teach me a lesson. It's just the fact that somehow I'm going to drop dead with something. I've got to die with something. I have to. And it isn't that God's causing this deliberately. It's just the fact that I'm human and I'm mortal and my body will peg it somehow in some way. And that's just the way it is. There's a freedom about the world and the body and the health and all that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Oops. I'll go to Jono first.
I'm just thinking when he went through about suffering, thinking about 2 Corinthians 12 and Paul's vision and his thorn in the side.
Yes,
and
yes.
He talks about there, doesn't it, about where Paul was given this thorn in the side.
Yes.
We don't know exactly what it was.
No. Nope.
And then he prayed 3 times. I plead the Lord about this, that he should leave me. But he said, my grace is sufficient for you, and so on and so forth.
Yes.
So I think from my reading, my understanding is sometimes God does allow sufferings, because that is for, Paul says quite surely, it's for his humility that he wouldn't become conceited. So in that situation, God allowed this on Paul in order not to control him, but also to not make him become big-headed, which he said in the Bible. So that was one thing. And another point, obviously in Genesis, we're told after the fall of man that things will happen, won't it? That after we disobey God, that there are going to be illnesses, the females' child pains are going to become bigger, we're going to have to dig for food and stuff. So I think for an imperfect world, there are going to be illnesses, sicknesses and whatever, which are going to happen. And then we are told to obviously praise God, be happy in all situations. We're told to love God. And I know it doesn't answer the question why suffering happens, no, but it's out of a fallen world.
No. I mean, going back to the two things, the Apostle Paul thing, Paul was desperately, as you say, you don't know what this thorn in the flesh was. Was it an illness, an affliction he had? Was it a person? We don't know. But you can imagine in his agony and his anguish, he prayed to the Lord constantly for this thing to go away. and it never did go away. And the answer that he gets back is, my grace is sufficient for you. And sometimes that is, for us, the only answer that we can take. My grace is sufficient for you. I'm with you in this. I can't take it away, but I'll be with you in it. With regard to Genesis, I don't know whether I'm allowed to give a plug or not.
Briefly,
thank you. There is a Baptist minister around the corner at Gillingham Baptist Church who is doing a series of Lent studies. It's actually starting a week earlier than Lent. It's actually next Sunday evening at 5:30 at Gillingham Baptist Church. Seven sessions on the fall of man, from Genesis 2 and 3, and then into Romans 5 and 1 Corinthians 15. So I just mentioned that, and if anybody wants a flyer, there's a flyer there.
I mean, I would just add to what you're saying, that as a disabled person, you don't get the answer to why this is happening. I mean, as Stephen said, often the only answer you get is, my grace is sufficient for you. So whether Job's suffering was evil lashing out, which is implied in the story, or a random world, the point is that Job never knew the answer. He never knew about this apparent dialogue in heaven where God said, you know, Job's wonderful. So he said, no, he's not. He's just doing that because of what you've given him. And then he takes that away. And then God says, see, what did I tell you? No. He's only doing that because you haven't hurt him yet. Make him sick and you'll see his true colours. But the point is, Job doesn't get to hear that. And what we don't like, I think, we want an answer. We want to know why, as I've said before. And often the answer you get from God is, I'm not going to tell you, but will you trust me anyway?
I think it's very helpful to have the affirmation that God does not cause us to suffer.
Yes.
But if we go back to the Genesis story, man causes himself to suffer.
Yeah.
It was because of temptation that the whole business of man being estranged from God came about. And in today's world, and in fact down through the centuries, so often because man has got free will, he chooses paths that lead to his own suffering.
Yes.
I think, for example, of the drug addict.
Yes.
I think of the alcoholic. I think of those who get involved in gambling. They have chosen to do these things, and the result of those choices are suffering, not imposed by God, but as a direct result of their wrong choices.
That will be true in some cases. My dad was a heavy smoker. He got lung cancer. There's a connection there. That will be true in some cases where we do cause our own suffering, but not every case.
No.
And there will be lots and lots and lots of cases where things just happen because they just happen. Mm. So while some of it is self-inflicted, it cannot be everything.
No.
Dementia, age-related dementia, our friend on Cleve Road, age-related dementia, has Beryl done something to deserve that? I don't know.
Thank you very much, Stephen. That was a great helpful exposition of the book of Job. One of the things I wanted to bring up, really, because in fact you keep on going around the subject of evil, really, which is the big question pastorally, certainly in my experience visiting people on St Mary's Island, one of their enormous questions. They don't think they've lived a perfect life for a moment. They want to tell you that, why did Mum die of so-and-so? Why did my brother, who was on his motorbike, why did he get killed? Because we're putting over the concept that God is good, he loves you, he has a plan for you, he knows all about you. So the concept is opposite, in a sense, to what we're saying sometime. And I must admit, and I remember an Alpha course in this church saying the same thing to someone when they asked what happens in the end times, I said, I don't honestly know. It's in the Christian faith, I think there are a number of tensions.
Yes.
And we have to hold them together.
Yes.
And if you're not careful, one of the tensions will knock you down.
Yes. Yeah.
But you've got to hang on to it that, in fact, they are true.
Yes.
But I don't really understand why one bit is opposite to the other.
Yes. That is such a helpful way of putting it, Ernie. And I would say that one of those tensions is the balance between what Rob was saying about the sovereignty of God and the goodness of God. And it's that tension. It's a difficult one, and you just have to hold the two together. You know, David's absolutely right. We cannot explain God. We cannot understand the mysteries of the universe. We cannot. And sometimes we just have to hold those tensions together, unable to reconcile, but recognizing that they are tensions. Very, very good. Yeah.
I just add this. Probably one of the things Christians are really uncomfortable about, and which I think Job's friends were uncomfortable about too, was that what they should have said to Job was, "I don't know." If he'd asked them, it would have been better if they'd actually told him the truth, which was, "I don't know why this is happening to you, but for what it's worth, I'm still here, and I'm not leaving you either."
Yeah.
And very often as Christians, we want to explain it, and with the limited experience I've had of friends and colleagues at work who have been bereaved, I would usually just not know what to say to them, but I'd send them a message like, "I hope today's not been too difficult for you, but I'm thinking of you, I'm praying for you, I'm here if you want to talk or not." And at the time, I felt pretty stupid. But I was surprised at how people would come up to me afterwards and say, "Thank you for looking after her when she lost her mum." Because I didn't think I'd said anything.
Yeah.
So maybe the clue in that is silence is best.
Yes, yes.
What Johnny Erickson Tada said, because she actually wasn't able to... when she had a diving accident, she actually didn't... She was a quadriplegic.
Yes.
And she desperately wanted healing.
Yes.
And she never found it. But then she said how, when she was looking through the Book of Mark, she realized, she had a moment where God actually said, where Jesus said, "Let us go to another town where I can preach the gospel there." And that was when she had her moment to realize that God is bigger than she realized, and that he has other purposes, not just to heal, although that's one of the purposes. But one thing I've been interested in, there's a lot of debate as to the chronology of Job. And some people say it's after Genesis 11, and some say we just don't know. In your opinion, where does Job fall in the chronology of the Bible?
I have to go back to commentaries and have a look at it. I don't know, Samuel. I don't think the chronology is desperately important. I think what's important is that it's there, and we don't know who the author is, and I don't think that matters either. Can I go back to what you said at the start, though, about Johnny Erickson? I have a fundamental difference of opinion with Johnny Erickson. She says in one of her books that God caused her accident for inscrutable reasons that were known only to him. I struggle with that as an explanation altogether. What I can accept is that having had that accident, God was then able to use her in a ministry that has reached out to countless thousands of people. Now, that's the way I would rather use it, to say that God has been able to use her tragedy and suffering for positive outcomes. I would not want to say that God caused that suffering in the first place, because to attribute that to God, I think, would malign him and turning him into a monster. But I'm happy to be able to say that God was able to use her suffering and her tragic misfortune in a way that would allow her to reach out to many, many people. So, but there's a difference between that too.
I would just add, as a disabled person, that Samuel and Rhea both have ended up on the wrong side of people who tried the why haven't you been healed trick or the why did God cause it trick. It's always a bit of a tension between people who say, you know, I can't accept God could cause this, and people who say, well, I can accept God caused this because. But as Stephen said, the danger is it's okay to apply that to yourself if you really want to. Maybe it does help you. As long as you then don't start trying to apply it to everybody else, because that's when you start to look pretty foolish. But this goes right back to the dawn of time. If you read the book of Elijah, when Elijah is lodging with a widow and her son dies, his prayer to God isn't, God, I know you will heal him and bring him back to life, or God, I know Satan did it. His prayer is, God, how could you do this? You've told me to come to this widow. She's welcomed me into her house. You provided her with food, and now her son's dead. How could you let that happen? It's perfectly legitimate to have that cry to God of, I don't know what you're playing at. As long as what you eventually choose is, I can still trust you, even if I haven't got a clue what you're doing. Okay, do we have any more questions or comments?
Yeah, we are almost at 8 o'clock, but John did have his hand up.
Okay, right, fine.
So did you want to take one more?
One more, but that's it.
Everyone wants to say something. John was...
Lastly, I can remember a very, very difficult experience I had back in 1989 to 1992. I was helper at a club for people with handicaps. I used to take this particular chap to and from his home and to the club. And halfway through that period of time, he went down with this awful depression. I tried to help him as much as ever I could, and, you know, I'd done just about everything I probably could for him. And at the end of the day, he went and committed suicide by jumping in the river, and it made me feel like I'd been a failure, and I hadn't.
Yeah, you know, the Holocaust thing, I think we know, you know, some people have said, I think it was some theologian said, you know, well, where was God? And I think one guy said, you know, no, it's not where was God. Where was man? Where were we? You know, and part of our walk, our discipleship is to stand in the gap and speak up for those who are down or you know, who are deprived, who have lost, whatever, however they're suffering, we should be there as Christians. So that's just one thing I wanted. Elihu, I haven't got time, but Elihu isn't mentioned.
He's not mentioned.
No, at the end, and I'd like to, you know, what you think about Elihu, because I think he was the youngest, and he, you know, these old guys, they thought they had it, and I think you covered the pride thing. So I think there's something there as well.
Yes. People are... I'll go first, then Stephen go. People aren't sure about Elihu. I know some commentators who think he was added in later. And some people think that he was added in as sort of an introduction to God's discourse with Job, because he says something which is a little similar to what God says about nature towards the end of the chapter. But I think often Elihu's an example of how pastoring care can sometimes be a bit unhelpful. He was saying, maybe God's trying to teach you something, Job. But essentially, he was just annoyed that the older ones had gone first. He wanted to go. Essentially, all he really had to say was, I'm not happy with you. But again, it's all a bit complicated, and we don't really have a good answer to this. But that, for what it's worth, that's what I feel. Do you want to add anything, Stephen?
What he said... No, I'm with you. I, yeah.